right. Well, thanks, Steve. I appreciate that. Unfortunately, Vasud was called away on short notice for some travel, and he couldn't be here today to do this last talk in the session. So I'm pinch hitting for Vasud. I was principal investigator on this project, so hopefully I can get us through that. With that being said, this was a longwall face ventilation study in a trona mine, and we used tracer gas as an investigative tool in this study. So here's the outline that we put together. Vasud really put this talk together that you're seeing here today, and this is essentially the material we should be seeing. So this goes back to some questions we had about longwall face ventilation. And ultimately, with the trends in the industry, with increasing face width, increasing panel size, the question was, could you, you know, how does that affect face ventilation? One question that was asked is, with these changes, is there a potential for interchange between gob air at the front of the gob and the air on the longwall face? That was certainly one of the questions. Some of the others are mentioned here. Does any of this change as face lengths increase? What about different caving characteristics? How do all of these things affect face ventilation? Certainly the type of ventilation being used. We really didn't get into gas content here in the trona study, but they don't use nitrogen injection at this site. But if you like, if there's time, we can come back to this slide and I can kind of give you the overall, what we learned overall on the project. These studies utilize tracer gas technology to do these face ventilation investigations. So what we ended up doing were two tracer gas tests at these mines, and so we would do a small release on the longwall face and then a subsequent larger release in the gob. And this is a sudden release that's essentially released as a slug. From that, we would sample all over these mines. Obviously, the face study were just there, but many samples taken at these mines. Pretty labor-intensive studies. And then we take our samples that we retrieve, and we analyze them by gas chromatography. And then, with all that data, we take those results and do some relatively standard tracer gas evaluations, corrections for elevation and temperature, STP conditions, all of that. So, I don't know how many people know about trona here in this audience. So trona is mined in Wyoming. It's in the Green River Basin. And all those mines, I think, are located in Sweetwater County in Wyoming. The mines all operate in the Green River Formation, and specifically the Wilkins Peak member there, which is shown in that gold in the diagram on the left. So that's where the trona units reside. So this is where our commercial trona mining is in the U.S. It is interbedded with Green River oil shale. Green River oil shale has a lot of organic matter in it, and so there is gas. It produces gas, namely methane, and so these mines can be quite gassy. So a trona longwall mine has some parallels to a longwall coal mine. And here is the site, this, we'll just call it an anonymous trona mine. Here are all the basic parameters, and we did this for all the sites. Just an overview of the ventilation there. It is, they did use bleeders. It is blowing ventilation, and you can see all the other parameters related to that that mine. And they have this zero entry there, and we'll talk about that. It's a pretty unique feature. And they have caving. Caving was of interest to us in this study relative to face ventilation. They had what we'll call, let's call it normal caving. Up to the roof is caving up to the back of the longwall shields. So I guess we'll start with the face test. So these are very small releases of tracer gas into the shield legs on the first shield, and that's what you're looking at right there. So we release tracer gas right there, and then we do monitoring on the face, and we'll show you our monitoring scheme here in a minute. So the release is there, and actually the two bundles are capturing samples on the shield canopies kind of over the paneling. This is a non-production, all these were non-production shifts. So this is our strategy we used for how we distributed sampling on these faces. And so you're seeing there the distribution of our sampling locations. There is that zero entry there, sort of towards the right. So that entry then is mined by the shearer as the face advances. So that's what we're referring to. And then in addition to those face locations, we had an in-by and an out-by tubing line at the tailgate corner. So in terms of ventilation measurements, assuming people mostly are comfortable with the English unit, so they're all the way on the right. So flow rate in thousands of cubic feet per minute. A lot of air was coming up that zero entry. And then that you see the addition of that air all the way down the face. And then so for our face study, start talking about here these lines 1, 2, and 3. So line 1 was the sequential going down the face. So we didn't get any, the first arrival of tracer gas was at mid-face. So it's at line 3. And then we had tracer gas 23 minutes after the release at line 1. And we never got any tracer gas at line 2. So line 2 actually was just towards the tailgate there of that zero entry. So we assume that was just wiped out by all that air coming up that entry. So we never saw tracer gas there. So we'll talk a little bit more about that line 1 result. But so first arrival at mid-face, and then lines 4 and 5 now. So now you're on the second half of the face. We had almost simultaneous arrivals of the tracer gas at those two locations, which is about what you would expect for tracer gas moving in face air for those distances. So the assumption here is, and supported by other data, that at this point this tracer gas that was moving behind the shields has now moved into the face air and is just moving down the face. For, again, line 6 and 7, this is that tailgate corner. So line 6 was the in-by line. We had tracer gas then picked up pretty quickly after the release. 6 minutes after the release. And then for line 7, the out-by line, we didn't have any gas until 44 minutes after the release. So much larger delay here for that that out-by line. And our assumption is that actually that tracer gas had moved into the gob and then just after sitting and the gob came out onto the face. And we think that's what happened with the line one data as well. At that head gate corner, our assumption is the tracer gas was just pushed back into the gob and then eventually came back out. For the gob test, we released tracer gas into the gob through a seal, two breaks in by the face, and there's the quantity of the release, and we used tubing to get through the seal, and we followed the tracer gas with carbon dioxide to push that back into the gob, and then we started our test. So here's the configuration here. We removed the face sampling locations. And so we had two sampling locations on the head gate side, an in-by and out-by tubing line, the same on the tailgate side. And then we had some locations at the back of the gob and the bleeders, and then a location at their bleeder shaft on the surface. So that's the release point there. And so from that release point then, the next the arrival of the tracer gas was at the tailgate out-by line. So that's the first arrival we had of tracer gas from that release. We never got anything on the headgate side. There was no tracer gas recovered on the in-by or out-by lines. And no gas moving in by at the tailgate. That may have, we're not 100% sure why that is. It may have been simply diluted below detection limits. And then the tracer gas continued moving towards the back of the panel. So there are the arrivals then for the headgate and tailgate bleeders, essentially simultaneously. And the rate of movement then, that's what we calculated for movement to the head gate. Bleeders 37 feet per minute. It's a migration rate of the tracer gas through the gob on the head gate side. And then we add the tracer gas at that surface borehole, measured a later arrival then after than the bleeder locations. So we can expand on that a bit. For the tailgate side, that is the tailgate out-by, the tracer gas arrived quickly, again, as we mentioned. And so we saw tracer gas there on day one. We saw it again on day two. Again, we didn't see it at the in-by location. These are relatively low concentrations of SF6. Again, we simply may have been too dilute going in the in-by direction. We're not sure. For the bleeders, these are data from the tailgate bleeder. They're showing the time of release there, and then this rising concentration that we saw at the tailgate bleeder on day one, reaching that maximum concentration. Again, these were 8-hour shifts, so when we returned on day two, concentrations were at a much lower level, and then decreasing over time, 5 days of monitoring, decreasing over time to as shown. So long residence time of tracer gas sitting in the gob, probably also indicative of slow rates of movement. We had that rate of gas moving, you know, straight back down the head gate side of the entry, but through the rest of the gob, lower permeability, lower rates of movement. And then on the head gate bleeder, pretty similar behavior to the tailgate side, rising concentrations there on day one, and then reaching a maximum and decreasing to the value shown on day two. That's the range of concentration we saw, and then into this 3 to 7 ppb range. And then for the bleeder shaft, we had tubing inlet about hanging about 10 feet down from the collar. And so we had gas arriving there about 4 hours afterwards, and then reaching a maximum concentration after about 7 hours later. And then again, we see these kind of this long-term occurrence of SF6 in the gob showing up at the bleeder shaft as well. So in summary, so one of the key questions we had wondered about for the face gas test, well, at this site, and I guess I can say all the other sites, we have this transport pathway for gas moving at the back of the shields and the front of the gob, generally from the head gate to the tail. The primary path of movement in the gob showed 37 feet per minute for a migration rate, and from that, from the release point, we can say that we had passive movement towards the face, with the primary pathway being towards the back of the panel. We had rapid movement from that release towards that tailgate corner. We can't say a lot about what that path was to reach that point, since we really didn't have monitoring locations to depict that. We certainly have multiple pathways of movement in the gob and on the face. Related NIOSH studies here on this project showed a high degree of interaction for face ventilation and the gas at the front of the gob. And like I said, we can touch on some of those other questions if you have an interest. This is the presentation Vasu put together. Hopefully.